You're listening to Ink Speak, where storytelling and poetry meet the wonder and magic of living. I'm your captain, author, poet, and unearther of life, Maverick Malone. Who else is feeling the fall vibes right now? If you're in the South like me, you might be embracing the vibes, but not necessarily vibing with the weather because it was 90 degrees here last week. But even so, I'm enjoying everything October is bringing. Okay, maybe not everything, because this week with the astrology and Jupiter going retrograde in Gemini, I have been put to the test with many situations. I got stung by a bee last week. I had to go to the dentist for a toothache. I found an infestation of ants in my linen closet. It's been a whole thing, but it has also brought some exciting things as well, one of which is the conversation I'm bringing you today with my friend Chelsea Chats. Chelsea is a Southern author and Chattanooga content creator, and we actually met back in early spring because we were both part of a large poetry book release through our publisher, Walnut Street Publishing. And she is such a warm soul and really embodies that Southern hospitality culture, even though she is actually a transplant from California. She's about to re-release a revamped collection of hers, Mud Water Will Rise. And I knew I wanted to have her on the podcast to chat about it, since one of the things I want to do on here is to amplify voices and create space for other people to tell their stories. So that's what today embodies. We tell some ghost stories, we dive into what magic is, and then Chelsea gives us a little taste of her work. The conversation is really interesting and juicy, but I do want to preface that the audio quality isn't 100% there because I wasn't using my own equipment. We recorded this at Common House, which for those of you that don't know is a social club here in Chattanooga, and the room we recorded in came with its own equipment. So there was a bit of a learning curve for me, but I was just glad I figured out how to record the conversation at all. So you can hear background noise, and it's, you can tell we're in a room because there's a lot of space. The acoustics aren't great, at least for not recording for the podcast, but that was user error because I didn't even think to use the mixer board. I was just focused on trying to get the mics to work so we could record sound. But even so, it's definitely worth the listen, and I think you'll be really intrigued by what Chelsea has to say. So I am here with my friend and local fellow poet, Chelsea Chats. So you are a California transplant, and you wrote a poetry book, Mud Water Will Rise, that embraces Southern culture. So tell us a little bit about that journey, like what brought you here to Chattanooga, and what made you want to write a poetry book inspired by Southern culture, which is so vastly different from California culture, I imagine.
Yeah, definitely. So my husband and I actually took a couple trips to New Orleans, which is much different than Chattanooga culture as well. But when we went to New Orleans, we just felt the warmness of the Southern culture. We loved the food. We loved pretty much everything that we came across when we were in New Orleans. I'm also a big fan of spooky season. So obviously, of course, that's a place you have to go for spooky season. And then fast forwarding, we had grown up in California for the last 30 years or so, and we just wanted to do something different. So we started doing a cross-country road trip for our honeymoon. This was the middle of the pandemic, so we weren't doing any international trips, and we decided this was a good opportunity to go city to city and kind of figure out where our next new home would be. We actually didn't make it to Chattanooga. We made it all the way to Nashville and Memphis, and our car actually broke down in the middle of our honeymoon, which is a whole other story. But when we got to Nashville and Memphis, we were thinking Nashville would maybe be the place we wanted to go, and it just didn't click. It's a great city to go and have a lot of fun, but we couldn't imagine ourselves really raising children there, which was part of the reason we were looking for somewhere new. California is just very expensive, as you can imagine. And when we got to Nashville and Memphis, we had so many locals telling us, you got to check out Chattanooga. If you're in Northern California, which is where we were based, we have a lot of mountains and nature around us. They're like, you're gonna love Chattanooga. You got the Tennessee River right there. We got the Appalachian Mountains. So just go check it out. Fast forward to next spring, we took a week and actually flew out to Chattanooga. We spent one entire week here, and we ended up putting an offer in on a house. And before we left for that trip, we got an accepted offer. So we left Chattanooga we're just stunned on the flight saying, oh my gosh, we're moving to Tennessee. Like, this is happening. So it was definitely a fast transition, but one that we do not regret. We've been here for 2.5 years now, and we absolutely love it.
What has been the biggest difference that you've seen between California and here?
You mean culture-wise?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. So California, as you can imagine, it's a bit laid back. It's still very family-oriented, but coming out here, the community is what really drew us in. I've never experienced community in the way that we have in Chattanooga. And I don't know if that's just the warmth of the Southern culture that drew us in initially when we were in New Orleans, but that is the biggest reason we decided to move here. Even when we were just visiting, there were so many locals. We were taking tours and just visiting, chatting with people. My husband, he's one of those people who can get along with anyone, and he'll talk to a stranger in an elevator, you know. And everyone was so encouraging of us moving here, and they were so accepting. And we were a little bit worried that being from California, people would automatically not like us, because there is kind of a stigma around Californians leaving California and moving to other states. So again, just that community and that feeling of welcomeness and warmness, I think that's the biggest draw for us. Not that California isn't welcoming, but it just doesn't have necessarily that overwhelming welcomeness.
Yeah, I think Chattanooga definitely has its own vibe, especially if you're talking about community in terms of the art community, which is we're going to circle back to poetry here. I'm really curious to know what specifically, like, how did you get into poetry? What drew you towards poetry? Were you always a fan of poetry? Because I know, like, I wasn't. My story is, like, I came from, we all kind of grow up with the same poets, like Poe and Whitman and Dickinson, and none of that stuff really resonated for me. So I didn't start getting into poetry until I discovered contemporary poets, specifically people on like Instagram that were writing a lot more things that I could resonate and see myself in their poetry and in their words. So I'm curious to hear, what is it about poetry that you're drawn to?
Yeah. So to answer your initial question, no, I was not drawn to poetry originally. I was an English major at UC Berkeley, but I always imagined myself being a novelist of some sort. I had initially planned actually to move to New York and kind of start an editorial and then do my books on the side, and life had a very different path in store for me. But part of the reason, again, that we were so drawn to Chattanooga, like you said, is the art scene. And so when we got here, I started doing poetry. A lot of it was mental health. It was initially just for me. I had started taking therapy just because, again, there were so many things that happened during the pandemic, and we had so much change during that time, you know, getting engaged, getting married, moving cross country away from family and friends. At the time, I didn't know, but I was pregnant. And so there was so much change happening in such a small amount of time that I decided to start writing again for myself. And I hadn't written in quite a while, maybe 5-10 years even, since I had graduated. And from there, I started really loving poetry, and I decided it wasn't something I just wanted to keep to myself. It was something I wanted to share. And I was so inspired, again, by the community here, by the nature here, and a lot of that is in my upcoming book, Mudwater Will Rise. You'll read a lot about all the different inspirations that drew us to the South. And as you can imagine, the South has a lot of different cultures within the culture. It's a melting pot. There's a lot of people who have been born and raised here. There are a lot of transplants moving here. There are a lot of opinions. And we had closed on our house a week before the Roe v. Wade leak happened. And at that time, we decided, you know, we're going to work through it. It's going to be okay. We'll see what happens. And then once it actually was overturned coming here, that was something that also sparked some anxiety and upset within me. And that's something that I started to incorporate into my poetry as well. And this is actually a second edition of Mudwater Will Rise. So the first edition is all about me and what I was going through at that moment in time. And it was a lot of mixed emotions. Again, very grateful for the community here, very grateful for all the nature that's around us, but also having these very complex feelings around the different political things that were happening in the South and in the Midwest, you know, all over the United States, really.
Did you always know that you wanted to write a poetry book?
No.
Or was there any point where you were just like, you know, you start out writing for yourself. That's how I started too, is actually through therapy. My therapist was the one who encouraged me to be like, let's explore this because you love writings. So let's explore this in a poem. And then for me, I just started writing so much and I realized I had so many poems that at some point I was like, this is a book. What was the clue in for you? Those, oh, I want to put this together as a book.
So there wasn't necessarily one thing that led to it. Again, as you mentioned, I had a lot of poems just through my own want of writing it for therapeutic reasons. But when we moved here, again, we talked about the art community and how it really has flourished here in Chattanooga. And at the time, there was a new publishing company called Walnut Street Publishing. They were putting out their first edition of a local magazine, and they were asking for submissions. So I decided to submit one of my poems, thinking really nothing of it. I was like, if it's meant to be, I'll be published in this magazine. If not, it's totally fine. So not only did Walnut Street Publishing pick up that poem, but they actually started discussing with me about signing on as an author. And that really sparked, okay, like this is a thing, like people are resonating with my poetry. And from that point, they were like, you know, we're doing something for National Poetry Day. We're going to be putting on this big event where we're putting out everybody's books. So from there, I put out a very tiny version, my first edition of Mud Water Will Rise. And again, that's all about my journey coming here. But for this second version, I really wanted it to be more about community and about the different perspectives and the melting pot of cultures within Southern culture. So you'll read a lot about my journey, but you'll also read about different perspectives from other people who have shared their stories with me. And they have graciously let me put that into my poetry, obviously anonymously, but nonetheless, this is really a piece about community and bringing community together rather than just sharing my story.
Mm-hmm. And why did you feel like a re-release of this book was the right move? And what can readers expect in the second edition that is maybe different from the first version?
Yeah, so this version, we have a few different chapters, whereas the first version, it wasn't put together quite the way I wanted it to be. The poems were very meshed all over the place, so to speak. Again, so this one will have different chapters. The first one is all about nature and what's inspiring about the Appalachian nature around us, but not only protecting nature and why that's important, but the spiritual aspect of that as well when you go into nature. So that's really my first chapter is all about that. Second chapter talks a little bit more about Southern lore, local haunts and things of that nature. Again, I'm a spooky season gal, so I just had to include that into my second edition, which is all about Southern culture. I can't leave that out. The third talks a lot about political reform and nonpartisan solutions, how we can come together in unity as a community, despite our different opinions about different leaders or about different issues. Last but not least, the fourth chapter is all about community. So those poems are those stories that were shared with me and the stories that have been put into my poetry. So that is all the last section of Mud Water Will Rise, which none of that was included in the first edition. So this one's much more organized. This one also lists a bunch of resources, nonpartisan once again, to help our community thrive and make progression forward despite our differences in opinions.
And it's longer too. Like, did you add more poems?
I did.
The second time around?
Yeah. So this one has about 55 poems, I believe. The last one had not even half of that. So there's a lot more poetry to be discovered.
And what I love about your collection, other than like the variants that you have, because you have the nature and then you have a little bit of the spooky stories, which I love, and that you provide some backstory on some of those, and that it definitely has some socio-political undertones, advocates for women's rights, and it touches on the dangers of rampant gun culture we find ourselves in today, mm-hmm. not just as a region, but as a country. And some of these topics could be polarizing, especially here, because this is the Bible Belt, after all, which isn't known for being the most progressive in terms of its thinking. But I love that you tackled some of these themes in the book. Were some of those poems inspired by any particular experiences, or were they just topics that you felt particularly called to?
A lot of them were things that I felt called to, but there were a couple incidents. So again, the first one being Roe v. Wade leak and then overturn. The overturn actually happened while we were on our way to Tennessee from California. I specifically remembered we stopped in Santa Fe for the night. You know, we hadn't really been on our phones because we were traveling and moving all of our stuff. We were on the road all day. And once we got to the hotel, we started reading news articles about the official overturn. And the noises that the people in the rooms next door must have.
I was just going to say, what was your reaction? Because I feel like that moment is going to go down in history as very like the moment we all, where we were on 9/11. I remember the exact moment where I was when I got that news too. And yeah. I was livid.
Me too, actually. But for this particular moment, I let out a scream, which is not something I typically do. That's not how I typically react to news, even bad news. And I just let out a scream and I started sobbing and sobbing and sobbing uncontrollably. And I started thinking to myself, did we make a mistake leaving California and coming to Tennessee with all of this going on? Obviously, we didn't know that that was going to happen when we had put an offer in on our home. My husband had to calm me down, and then eventually he left me just to be with my feelings for a little while. But I swear, I thought maybe the people next door thought he was murdering me because, like, I just
could you imagine the collective rage at that moment as a country? I'm envisioning that scene from, have you seen Monsters, Inc.?
Mm-hmm.
You know how they power everything with screams? Like, I feel like in that moment, we probably could have powered this entire country with the collective rage of women and yep. probably some men too, of just getting that news.
Definitely. And funny enough, you mentioned Monsters, Inc. That's actually our family Halloween costume this year.
I love that. Who's who?
So I am Mike, of course, the small little green guy. For those of you who don't know me very well, I'm 5'2". My husband is 6 foot, so he's
so
Sully.
Obviously Sully.
And then our daughter is Boo, and she's dressed up in the little
that's gonna be so
monster
cute.
Costume that they hide her in when she's inside the Scream Factory. So it's going to be a really cute family costume. I'm excited for it.
I love that. I don't have anything picked out this year. I don't know if I will end up doing something. I usually go all out for Halloween, but these past years, I'm just like, I don't have the energy for this.
Oh, I feel you. I have no energy lately, but Halloween is just something special in my heart, so I have to do it.
So in terms of these issues, was there anything else outside of that one experience that you're just like, I also have to put this in the book. I want to talk about this. Because I know there's a couple poems that touch on gun culture and things like that.
Yeah. So the Covenant school shooting. And there have been obviously a lot of mass shootings, especially in schools, which is just terrible. It just hit a little bit differently now that I have a child.
Yeah. I think part of that is because you can more easily place yourself in the position of, like, this could have been my child, you know?
Exactly. And it's just scary. Coming from California, of course, there is gun culture there, but it's not the norm, at least in my community. It wasn't the norm for
everyone to, like, have a gun.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. For your neighbors to have guns, for your family to have guns. It was pretty rare, in my circles, in my community. I'm sure there are other parts of California where it's a little bit different. But coming here and thinking, oh, I have to be so diligent about who my child hangs out with and who my, you know, what home my child goes to for play dates now, what's going to happen in schools where gun culture is so accepted here. So that really got me thinking, and I have a poem actually titled One in 1,000, because there's a statistic around 1,300 people, both children and adults, lose their lives to gun violence every year here in the state of Tennessee.
Which is wild. Mm-hmm. Like, that should not be a thing at all.
No.
It should be zero.
Yeah. So I have a poem in there very much about firearm safety, gun violence, and what we can do to move forward again without infringing on people's rights mm-hmm. to own a gun. But there are definitely a lot of safety measures that we could be putting in to protect our communities, to protect our children especially.
Right. Especially if we're thinking in terms of things teachers can do or things schools can do. It seems so backwards to me that we're asking teachers to play this role now of, like, policing who, you know, people in the schools, or they're building safe rooms in classrooms rather than just tackling the problem at its root.
Exactly.
And making laws and doing background checks, or just not selling a specific type of gun where the only purpose is for a mass shooting.
Exactly. And I mean, that's completely outside of the job description for a teacher.
Exactly.
They're there to educate.
Yeah. It's no wonder that teachers, we have a shortage
we
of
do.
That.
Actually, I was going to become a teacher. Again, this was pre-coming to Tennessee. It was pre-pandemic. It was 2019. I had started studying to get my master's in teaching so that I could go into teaching English lit in high school. And the pandemic hit, and at that time, it just wasn't the right move, and it just kind of fell away. It wasn't meant to be, I suppose. But after the pandemic and coming here and seeing how teachers are treated, how they're undervalued, how they're underpaid, I was like, no, this is not happening. And it's unfortunate because there are so many great educators and there are so many great people who want to educate, but then they look at, I'm not only getting terrible pay, but I'm not respected and I'm risking my life now. You know, that's not how it should be at all. And in a lot of other countries, being an educator is one of the most well-respected, well-paid positions that you can have. And here in America, that is not the case at all. And that needs to change.
I agree. I've always thought that was so strange about our country. Like, what sets us apart is we pay millions and millions of dollars to bigwigs in corporations or to celebrities, to football players. And yet the people that are making this country, its people, teaching its people, keeping its people alive, police officers, nurses, teachers are so grossly underpaid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a whole other.
Maybe that'll be in the second book.
Yeah, actually, that one will be in the third book. So this is actually a 4-part series. The first book is all about Southern culture. Again, this is through the eyes of a transplant, but it does have a lot of input from locals as well, whether they're transplants or they've been here for years and years and years. The second book coming out is all about my personal journey from California to Tennessee. And then the third and fourth books are going to be more about American culture in general, not just California culture, not just Tennessee culture, but really getting to the root of what makes America great, but also a lot of the things we need to fix in order to be
what makes America shit. That sounds like a parody book that someone needs to write.
What can make us a great country again, you know?
Right, yeah.
And we are very fortunate in a lot of ways here in America, but there are so many things we need to fix.
I agree. And I think writing is such a powerful vehicle for that, which I think is one of the major things that draws me to it and keeps me there, because it's just such a great way to reach people. And when you can use the power of storytelling, like you do in some of the poems about, you have one about the ghost of the, is it in the Reed House?
Oh my gosh, I actually right? have a great story for you guys. So the other night I did a ghost tour, and before I went on to the Chattanooga ghost tour, I actually decided to go to Reed House. I was with a friend of mine, and she was like, look, let's get a video of you actually reciting this poem in the Reed House, because there's a local legend about a woman who was murdered in the Reed House. And there's a lot of different folklore around how she was murdered, why she was murdered, if it was murder at all, maybe it was suicide, we don't know. And actually, there are a lot of other people who have passed away in the Reed House as well due to Civil War. That's a whole other backstory. But we decided to ask if we could get a tour of room 311, which is the alleged haunted room where Annalisa was murdered. So we not only got to go do a tour of this room, but the tour guide had asked, you know, where are you from? What's your name? What are you about? Kind of a thing. And I had mentioned that I was a local author and poet, and he was like, will you please do us the honor of reading your poem in Annalisa's room? So there's actually going to be footage of me coming out soon where I'm actually reciting the Annalisa Haunts poem inside the Reed House, inside room 311, which again is allegedly where her life was taken.
Did anything weird or unusual happen when you were doing that?
No, the room was very, very cold, but there was AC and fans going. So
hard to tell. Jury's still out on that one.
Exactly.
Have you ever had any like supernatural or kind of weird, spooky, unsettling experiences?
I did have one when I was younger, and it's hard to tell, you know, again, it was when I was young. So it's like, did I
did I dream
this?
Some of the
yeah. Yeah, but we had a cousin who had gone missing, quote unquote. He kind of ran away from home. We knew we would find him eventually, but we were searching all over. This was in Los Angeles. We were searching the city of Los Angeles for him. Couldn't find him anywhere. We actually had started to get worried at that point. And we ended up going back to my aunt's house where we have a car that was parked from another relative who had passed away recently. And this car was bent out of shape. It hadn't run in forever. It had been sitting right on the edge of this curb. And all of a sudden, a flash went off from the headlights. And when that flash went off, we saw my cousin just sitting there on the driveway. Like, here he is.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like, surprise.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one experience. And then I had one other experience where my grandpa had passed away and he was kind of the rock of our family. So obviously him passing really shook up the family dynamics and people were stressed out, not getting along, fighting a lot. And we were fighting in the middle of the kitchen. The kitchen led to the dining room where there's a chandelier on the ceiling. And the chandelier started swinging from side to side.
No, it didn't.
And then when we would stop fighting, it would stop. And then it would start again once we would fight. So again, this happened when I was young. So it's always like, I imagine this? Or are people just freaked out? And that's what they want to see. But those are the two ghostly experiences I've had. I want to have more now that I'm an adult. So I am open, you know, as long as you're
the
not
good,
bad,
not yeah. like you want to, yeah, be careful what you say there.
Yeah, no,
you want the non-threatening kind.
Yes.
Because I've had, I don't think I've ever really felt threatened in some of the experiences I've had, except they've definitely been unsettling. And I think the one that sticks out most in my mind was this was 2022. I was on my first solo road trip. So I was going down the East Coast of Florida and I was coming back from this trip and I stopped at an Airbnb that was just a treehouse somewhere in like rural Florida. So but when I say treehouse, it's not like those bougie kind of treehouses that they have now that you think about. This is literally just like a platform built into a tree with a mattress dumped on top. And I was going to sleep, and then I woke up in the middle of the night to the feeling of a literal hand, like a physical hand on my back. But, no. And I woke up and like switched on the light on my phone because there really wasn't, I don't think the light switch was like far away from where I was. Obviously there was nothing there, but I was so deeply unsettled.
Oh my.
This treehouse was on the edge of the woods. So I had to like, for me in that moment, and I talk about this in one of my, journals or something, of how that moment really taught me you have to be the one sometimes to just calm yourself down and how to self-regulate. That was we're going to push you off the cliff here and give you this test to see how well you can regulate your nervous system.
Yeah. But lesson learned.
Yes.
Right? So after that experience, did you just get the heck out of Dodge? Like, what did you do?
Yeah. The next morning I was just packed up and I was like, okay,
you stayed the night.
Yes, I did. I went back to sleep. I was up for a while and I just kept writing. This actually goes back to a dream I had recently where I get messages a lot in my dream. I think you know this, and many of my listeners already know this. I get a lot of messages in my dream. But in my dream, it said, when you're scared, write. Mm. And that's what I did in that moment, and that's what I do anytime I have like difficult feelings, which is another reason why I think poetry and writing and journaling is so powerful, is just to alchemize emotion, no matter what that emotion is. And if you're feeling elation or joy, like you can encapsulate that, and it turns into like this book of memories. Is what that's all a poem sometimes is to me, is just like a beautiful memory encapsulated.
I love that. That is something I love about your poetry, because in my poetry, I tackle a lot of issues and deeply unsettling things, but sometimes it's just nice to turn on or to turn to Maverick's work.
Sometimes you just need totally a love different poem.
Yeah, it's something totally different. And that's something I also love about poetry. It's like you said, it's really regulating the human experience and your emotions. And there's such a broad range of emotions and topics to be explored that poetry can really resonate with anyone. I even have friends who, they were surprised that I started getting into poetry. And I said, well, you know, do you enjoy music? And they were like, well, yeah, but what does that have to do with poetry? And it's like, well, a lot of music is poetry. It's just, it's put to music, right?
That's what I always say. I say poetry is just lyrics without the music.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no sound, but if you're really skilled, like using the different literary devices, you can actually create sound in your poem.
Exactly. And so once I put it that way to them, they're like, oh, wow, I guess I do listen to poetry. It's just again, it's in the form of music. Mm-hmm. So that, I think when I explain poetry to people who may be closed off to poetry, when I explain it that way, it opens a lot of eyes and a lot of ears to poetry, which I love, because I do think it's having a bit of a renaissance right now.
I agree, and yes.
Yeah, a lot of people are feeling the feels and they're here for it. And we want to make sure that all of our poetry out there is being read and being heard through spoken word as well, which you are so, you're so great at.
Thank you.
I need to work on my spoken word, y'all.
I love the variance that we're seeing in poetry today. Like, it's so accessible, because even in terms of the language, poetry used to be something that was kind of written very archaically and could be hard to understand. And mm-hmm. even I sometimes will read some of these old poets. I'll read a poem and I'm like, I have no idea what this was about.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I feel like stuff today is much more contemporary in terms of it's dealing with current issues, for one thing, that a lot more people can resonate with. And just in terms of the way it's written, the language is more accessible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I know, but I think it's important to study a lot of older poetry just mm-hmm. to understand,
to have a basis and a foundation.
Exactly. Yeah. But from a technical standpoint, but I don't necessarily think, like you said, that's something that resonates with people today. I think people really need to stay true to who they are. And we've talked a lot about our different poetry styles as well. Like, I use a lot of rhythm and rhyme in my poetry specifically. And again, that kind of goes back to more of the lyrical and the musical side of things, even though I have no music background whatsoever. That's just the type of poetry that resonates with me. And I think it resonates with a lot of different types of people nowadays. And a lot of yours also has rhythm and rhyme, but in a very different way, very different topics, very different emotions. And they're both unique in their own ways, but at the same time, they're both so accessible to the audience everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I love about contemporary poetry today.
Yeah, and I love that with writing, you can really tell everyone has their, like you said, their own unique voice and a different style. So how you write a poem is vastly different from how I write a poem. Even if we're tackling the same subject or talking about the same emotion, it just speaks to the unique individual of how we kind of encapsulate and experience that and then put it into words.
Exactly.
Which is magic. It's just another form of magic to me, honestly.
Yeah. Humanity is magic.
Oh, I love that. That is a great quote. Yeah. Humanity is magic.
It really is. And I have a poem about that as well, and spirituality being magical.
I remember. Okay, so if you people listening, I actually helped edit her second version of this book, and I remember this poem. It was something about the science of spirituality.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I remember reading that and I was like, "Oh, cuz those are two of my favorite subjects. I have a degree in biology that I don't use." And I feel like this second half of my life is really all about the spiritual side, but also without losing the logic and reason. Like, I think we need both. You need mm-hmm. the science and the spirituality, which is very much what that poem was about.
Yeah, definitely. Because there are a lot of people, you know, there are two sides to it. There are some people who really believe in God and creating the universe, and that science is, you know, nothing basically. And then you have the other side where it's all science, and they, you know, they may not necessarily believe in the spiritual side of things. But I personally, you know, again, we believe in logic, but I'm not a religious person, but I am a spiritual person.
Same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I believe in vibes. I believe that there is something hereafter. Is it heaven? Is it hell? Is it reincarnation? I have no idea, but I do think that there's something after this. And I do believe that a lot of what we experience on an everyday basis is magic in itself. And a lot of people don't look at it that way. They think of magic as like hocus pocus.
Harry Potter, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But if you look at what the world has become and how humanity has grown into what it is today, that in itself is magic. And now it's up to us to utilize that magic for good,
yes.
rather than wielding it for our own agendas and whatnot.
Which is what art is another great vehicle for, is helping those people that can't see the magic, just kind of exposing them to it through music or through visual arts or dance or obviously poetry, and just opening eyes to the wonder that is ever present, you know, in nature, or in concepts like love, or that kind of the everyday ordinary, how there is magic there too.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't agree more.
So let's talk a little bit about maybe some of your favorite poems in the collection, or are there certain poems that you want to share and read on here?
So I did have a couple ready. So I was planning to do Annalisa Haunts because that is something that...
It's very fitting for October too.
Exactly.
Spooky season.
We're
yeah.
in spooky season.
Season of the witch.
Yes, exactly. I love me some spooky season. So I'm happy to read that one. And then another one as of recent that I think is really something that the audience can connect with is obviously there's been a lot of devastation due to hurricanes, especially here in the Southeast. We just had Hurricane Milton. We had Hurricane Helene.
Yeah, which just devastated Asheville and parts and other parts, not just Asheville, but...
Yeah, Asheville definitely got hit the hardest.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most surprising aspect of all of this is that a mountain town that is fairly inland got hit so hard. And we were lucky here in Chattanooga even. I know we were at one point in its path and it kind of veered off. And we did get some rain, some heavy rain, but we didn't.
Could you imagine if Chattanooga got what Asheville got? We would just decimate this entire city.
Yeah,
we would not be here.
None of us would be here, honestly.
Oof, yeah.
So there's another poem in my series called Elevated Appalachia, which is all about community here. And I thought that would be a really fitting poem to share right now, given all the devastation that has happened in the Appalachia region.
All right, let's do it.
So starting with Appalachia, Elevated Appalachia. There's something about this landscape inviting us to take up space. There's something about this region, its legion of changing seasons. There's something about the river bend, mending time, melting hearts. We rise like the mud water at high tide. Purple perfume carried by the wind, wild children, neighbors closest kin. Bruised and scuffed, we lift each other up, high as the Appalachian Mountains. Skin to skin, sinking into grass and mud, nothing but love. The iris blooms spare our souls, the gravel meets the solemn dirt road. We return to the mountains we call home. Elevated without contemplation, elevated without complication, we lift each other up, high as the Appalachian Mountains.
I love the imagery in that one. I'm a sucker for a good, like, nature poem.
Me too.
Anything involving mountains, like, I'm there.
Yeah, I know. That was, again, something that drew us to Chattanooga was mm-hmm. all the access to the nature.
They don't call
here.
It the scenic city for nothing, y'all.
Mm-hmm. You gotta come visit. All right, and then ending with spooky season, we have Annalisa Haunts. The Crutchfield concealed its dark history. A boulder of a Union soldier escorted me to room 311, exposing me to a taste of erotic heaven. But in reality, this place, this anguished space, is host to our haunted joust, our homicidal home and judgment house. Annalisa, 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 chalked up to southern haunts. Once upon a time, I was more than my ending. I was a woman of want, a woman of flaunt. Once a lady of the night, I am now a mystery, a spirit that will never leave. Yet I am all things you and me. I am forever a piece of history. Skin to bone, he took my head and then the throne, a flood of blood eternally stained with my ancestry. And still, I am all things you and me, a spirit that will never leave. I am an immortal piece of history.
That's such a good one for Chattanooga, too. I remember when I first came here, hearing pieces of that story, though I've never been in the room. I don't know if I really want to be in the room.
I feel like it would not be your vibe.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I'll show you videos.
Yeah, I do look forward to seeing that and hearing the piece. Like, that's really cool that you got to do that, to read that poem in there. And hopefully her spirit appreciated that.
Yeah, I know. When I got in there, I was like, I actually talked to her. I was like, Annalisa, I hope you like this.
Uh-huh.
Please don't.
Because I've subscribed to all of this stuff. And I believe that if there is something there, like some resonant piece of her spirit, I guess, is still there. But even in death, like, you still have to be respectful. Be respectful of the spirits because they can also do shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't piss off a spirit.
Yeah, definitely. It was also interesting, too, going through the Reed House and getting the tour because the hotel history is different from the history that I had done research on and read because there's just so much folklore around her death. So if anybody has an opportunity to go to Reed House and you're interested in going into room 311, you know, take a read at my poem first and then go into the room and listen to the history of Annalisa and the room itself, and make up your own mind. See what you know you think resonates most.
Is that something anyone can do if you want to take a tour of that room?
Yep, definitely, and it's free as well. Oh, okay. So they do multiple tours a day, and this is something that we discovered. We asked for a tour, and when we got there, we discovered they give multiple tours every day, and there were other people already signed up. So I did this reciting of my poem in front of a crowd, which I was.
So you had a little mini poetry reading.
I did, and I met some cool folks. There was a singer-songwriter from Nashville there, and there was another guy who is here on business with Volkswagen, which for people who don't know, we do have the VW headquarters here for the electric cars. So he was here on business, but he runs a horror book club in Canada, of all places. And he's like, can I record this? This is so cool. Everybody's going to love this back home. So
that's awesome.
I got to meet a lot of really cool people through it.
Right place,
well.
Right time.
Totally.
Horror, though, is just not my genre. That has never been my genre.
Yeah.
Never will be my genre. But clearly there is a large market for it, for that, and like true crime and like all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I am a true crime gal. I'm not going
to
lie.
I used to be. Not so much anymore.
I feel like that, again, since having my daughter, a lot of that has made me very squeamish, like thinking about something that could happen to her. I still enjoy true crime, but the horror stuff, I'm a little bit out as well.
My mind is active enough already. I don't need other people putting terrifying images in my head.
I love me some Disney Plus Halloween Town.
Yes. What are your favorite like movies to watch around this time of year?
Oh my gosh.
Hocus Pocus better be on your list.
Yeah, Hocus Pocus for sure. Hocus Pocus, Halloween Town, Under Wraps. Again, those are all
classic.
My
Disney originals.
Yep. I love, and this is something that's newer, but I love Only Murders in the Building because it's not.
I haven't seen that.
Is it? Watch it. It's not scary. Yeah, no, it's not. And honestly, it tackles kind of true crime, spooky season but from a comical standpoint, I suppose.
I can do dark comedy.
Yeah. So it's more of a dark comedy. So I would definitely highly recommend checking that out.
What about Casper?
I
feel like I need to rewatch that movie.
Yeah,
I haven't seen that long time.
But weirdly enough, I do have a friend who, she's coming over for a play date, and she had mentioned, she's like, my kid loves Casper. So I was like, okay, I'll add it to the list.
I was trying to decide if Lily is ready for watching. I mean, she's watched the couple of the Harry Potters, but we had to stop when we got to, I don't know, maybe like number four, because I was like, okay, this is where it kind of starts getting pretty dark.
Pretty dark, yeah.
But definitely. I was like, I feel like Casper, she could probably, there's just like, poorly animated CGI ghosts with from what, the 90s maybe? Is that
I think so, or early 2000s. I'm not sure. It's all a blur to me. I'm an elder millennial, so
same.
But I think she's old enough. I think you're okay to
maybe we'll try that. Yeah, if not, there's always Halloween Town.
Exactly.
Which is a classic.
I can rewatch that over and over. My husband makes fun of me because during spooky season he's like, this is clearly your go-to when you don't know what to put on, and just put it on in the background. So
what's on the horizon for you? We know you have the follow-up collections, or part of this collection, to the book 2, 3, and 4, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then I know you also went to Italy recently, and are you going to be putting out some sort of travel-inspired collection at some point?
So I am. I'm actually starting to work on a piece that it focuses a little bit more on my personal history, my family's history, especially the women in my family. Just to give a little context, my mom's side of the family is 100% Italian, and then my dad's side, it's a little bit of a mixture, which I do want to explore at some point, but I've always been very rooted with my Italian culture and my Italian family because they also lived on the West Coast with me growing up. So that my recent trip to Italy has definitely inspired me. I've already started writing some poetry around that, but I want to make it all about reconnecting with my heritage, reconnecting with my family, and the women in my family, even some of them who have passed. Like my grandma passed about a year ago now, and she was the real Italian woman in our family. You know, she was a handful.
We need those kinds of women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love her. But yes, so you can expect a poetry collection called Ciao Della, which is, for those of you who don't know, my daughter, her name is Delaney. We call her Della. So rather than Ciao Bella, it's Ciao Della.
I love that so much.
Yeah. So we'll have a poetry collection coming out. It will likely be after the Mudwater Will Rise poetry collection, just because this has already been started. I want to keep the ball rolling with this, but be on the lookout.
For you, when you travel, do you feel innately inspired? Because I know that is typically the case for me, no matter if it's international, which I have not had the chance to do too much of that yet, or just going 2 hours away somewhere in Alabama. But anytime I'm traveling, I think it's just the nuance of being somewhere else and having these new experiences that just sparks something in me.
Yeah, definitely. And I think for me personally, part of it is I can't be go, go, go all the time. Maybe sometimes I'll reflect on a travel and I'll write afterwards, but I really like to kind of carve in time where it's just me time, where I can sit down and really think about the travels that I have the opportunity to visit all these different locations and what I'm feeling in those moments, what I'm noticing about the culture around me, and then take some time to write while I'm there. Because for me, my memory's not so great.
I'm always writing things down.
Yeah.
This morning, I put a waffle in the toaster and then completely forgot about it. Like, that's how bad my memory is sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Or it's like, I'll make a cup of tea, put it down, and then I'll forget that I already made a cup of tea and make a new one.
To know I'm not alone.
Yeah, yeah. So I need to write while I'm in these places. And then I can keep it going, as I return from my travels.
I think too, because you're in that moment, you're in that emotion, and you're just kind of taking like a little snapshot of it through your words.
Exactly. This last trip was a little bit harder in Italy just because I did catch the flu, unfortunately, while I was there. So I, even though I was inspired and I was still kind of pushing myself through it to try and enjoy as much as I could in the moment, I just did not have the energy. And that, on top of my autoimmune disease, which is Crohn's disease, it was just like a no-go. Like, I did not have time to write while I was
That's
there.
When you kind of throw your hands up and you're like, seriously, universe, now I'm on vacation.
I did everything I could to avoid this. I got vitamin infusions. I had my biologic infusions before this. I did not go out in public. I wore masks at the airport, and it still happened. And I'm just like, really? Why?
Where in Italy were you?
So we flew into Rome and we spent the first few days there, which I had been to Rome once when I think I was about 16, but we only had half a day in Rome. And I remember just going from place to place to place because there's so much history there. And I was kind of dreading going to Rome at first, honestly, because I just remember it being very chaotic and I am already an anxious person. So I was like, I don't think this is going to be my place. I think I'm going to be much more of a Tuscany girl. But once I got there and because we had those extra days, I was so inspired by Rome and how much history is there. It's like you just turn the corner and there's this thousands of thousands year old structure.
Which
right
is
next to
amazing.
A cafe. Yeah.
Look, what is the U.S. going to look like in 1,000 years? It's just going to be a bunch of abandoned Walmarts and Chick-fil-A's still standing. And people are going to be like, what was this culture like?
Yeah. Things were just built differently.
Yeah.
Better than
I agree.
They were, and actually that was something our tour guide had talked about. He was like, they built things to last because when you acquired, quote unquote, which basically meant you raided and you took, up an estate or whatever it may be, you wanted your name to be known and you wanted your name to last. So you wanted your estate to last. So they built things to last. Whereas now it's like, it's all about saving costs
and planned obsolescence, which I think some things are built specifically to eventually need to be replaced.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just very different mindsets, very different cultures. But that's a great thought. I do wonder what the U.S. will look like in so many years. I don't know if we'll be around to see it.
Probably not. At least not this version of us. And hopefully not. We won't be stuck in a hotel as a spirit either.
Hopefully not.
Do you have places on your bucket list that you want to travel to next?
I have so many places. It's hard to pick where I want to go next, but I have a really big sweet tooth, so I want to go to Switzerland and
just all the chocolate.
Yeah, all the chocolate. Just eat all the chocolate. Uh-huh.
Greece is probably at the top of my Paris is first. Paris and then Greece.
Paris, I love Paris. I really want to go back to Paris. But interestingly enough, I had discovered a woman from my hometown, actually, while I was in Italy. We were on the same wine tour. She was with a completely different group of people. We were just kind of, you know, stuck together on this tour. It turns out she's from California as well, like I said, my hometown. And she moved to Greece and she opened up a wellness retreat and she was telling me all about it. And I told her, I was like, whenever I come to Greece, I'm booking through you because this sounds amazing. So I will send you that information.
That sounds awesome. Is it a place where they do like yoga and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, she actually leads the yoga for the retreat.
Talk about a dream job. Like, oh, I just teach yoga and I host retreats in Greece. No big deal.
I know, right? Talk about a lifestyle change.
Right? Let's manifest that. But like with just traveling and writing and getting paid for that. So
right. The ultimate dream.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think that's like all any of us want is just to get paid for and make a living doing what we love, whatever that is that you love. So as we wrap up, something I've started to ask on my podcast when I interview people is a very open-ended but existential question. So there's no right or wrong answer. It's completely however you interpret it. But in your own words, what is the meaning of life? Like, why are we here?
Well, while I'm on the spot, I think the meaning of life is really to keep society going and to improve society for future generations to come. And I think it's magical that we're here to begin with, but I think there's something to all this magic and that we're meant to be here for a reason. And that reason is to continue to make the world a better place.
I love that. I agree with that too. That's such a beautiful way to look at it.
Thank you.
And lastly, where can people find you and connect with you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So you can find me on Instagram. I'm at chelseachats.com. So that's Chelsea, C-H-E-L-S-E-A dot chats with two T's, C-H-A-T-T-S. You can also find me at chelseachats.com. Find me on Threads as well. And
where can we get your book? Where's the easiest place to order that from?
So you can buy the book directly through my website. You can also go through my publisher, which is walnutstreetpublishing.com. And soon I will have it available on Amazon as well, which is probably the easiest place for y'all to go.
All right. And I will have all of that information in the show notes for quick and easy access. So thank you so much for joining me. And I'm so happy that we finally got to have this chat.
Me too. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for sticking around until the very end. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to support my one-woman show, please subscribe and share it on social media or leave a rating and review. Those are the best ways to show your love and support for my work and will help this podcast to be found more easily, and that in turn helps this whole thing grow. To catch the latest from me, you can follow me on Instagram at Mav Malone. Let's connect. My DMs are always open and I'd love to hear from you. If you want to stay up to date on the latest events, books, podcast episodes, and hear more from me, you can sign up for my Substack newsletter, Junk Drawer, at maverickmalone.substack.com. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.